It's PacView's Melissa Burdick, the Wizard of Woodland Hills Shree, special guest host Jackie Danowski from Flywheel, and I'm PVSB, also from Flywheel, a division of Omnicom. Before we get to the CPG Guys episode you've downloaded, it's the week of April 29th, an ACDS annual week, and it's time for the Fresh Four. Four curated news stories from the past week. We find them masterfully intriguing. We hope you do too. They're brought to you through our partnership with RetailWit, your one-stop shop for retail industry intelligence and news. RetailWit.com, it's retail right now. Sheree, lead us off, would you?
Albertsons has been named the 2024 winner of the Webby Award for People's Voice Top Shopping and Retail App. I am so immensely proud of the shopper experience team, our engineering counterparts, and all of our cross-functional partners across the organization. Cheers to your hard work and customer obsession, said Jill Pavlovich, SVP of Customer Experience at Albertsons. 23 individual Albertsons associates were recognized in earning this award. Congratulations to all of you, and over to you, Melissa.
Best Buy and CNET are combining their ad inventory. Consumer electronics retailer Best Buy and digital publisher CNET are teaming up to create a new retail media model. The electronics retailer and the publisher are combining their ad inventory, allowing advertisers to buy across Best Buy Ads retail media network and alongside CNET's tech review-focused editorial content, and measure whether ads seen on either platform drove sales. In a month-long survey during which CNET content was displayed nationally across Best Buy's in-store TV walls, 86% of respondents said the content made them more confident in their purchases. It also garnered a 25% lift in purchase intent, according to the companies. Super interesting space as retailers continue to look for differentiation.
Thank you, Melissa. The National Association of Chain Drugstore annual meeting set to take place this week in Palm Beach, Florida. The annual meeting of the NACDS is set to begin Sunday, April 27th at the Breakers Hotel in Palm Beach, Florida. Featured speakers include Walter Isaacson and Arthur C. Brooks. NACDS annual is noted for the strategic meetings that transpire between retailers, consumer goods manufacturers, sales and marketing agencies, and other ecosystem service partners. If you're on a budget, make sure to get a hot dog at the poolside restaurant at $27. It is the least expensive menu entree offered at this five-star resort. Brian, Sheree, and Andrea are all in attendance this year. Closing it out, Jackie.
Hello, Fresh Four listeners. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free hits shelves. Red Bull is launching a new permanent sugar-free edition this summer. Red Bull Pink Edition Sugar-Free combines raspberry and forest fruits with herbal notes of verbena. It is the second new variant introduced by the brand this year, and the first fully sugar-free flavor in its portfolio, aiming to attract new shoppers to the category. Red Bull editions have been largely incremental to the brand, with 50% of edition buyers being new to Red Bull as they grow their flavor offering.
Thank you, Jackie, and welcome as a guest host to the Fresh Four. That's it for the Fresh Four. Now on to the CPG Guys episode that you've downloaded. Welcome to another episode of the CPG Guys podcast. Our hosts, Sheree Rajagopalan, Peter V.S. Bond, and Brian Gildenberg explore how brands and retailers engage consumers in an increasingly digitally driven world. And now, the CPG Guys.
Why, hello there, and welcome to this episode of the CPG Guys podcast. I'm, of course, Sheree, your co-host, and joining me is PVSB. And when he's not co-hosting this podcast, he serves as partnership acceleration lead at Flywheel, a division of Omnicom that helps enterprise brands improve their SEO and SEM, growing their e-commerce's businesses in the process. Please do listen to my older daughter, Ria Raj's music at www.riaraj.com, R-H-E-R-A-J. Follow my younger daughter, Lara Raj, now a proud member of the Geffen Records group, Cat's Eye, while my wife, Kavita Raj, has her own podcast, Lights, Camera, Convo, on iHeartRadio. Yes, picked up by iHeartRadio and all streaming platforms with her co-host, Waleed Chaya. In May 2024, all four of us will have our own podcast because Cat's Eye now has Cat's Eye Radio, and Rhea will be announcing her own podcast, but I'll wait for her to do that before I share it here. Crazy family, that's what y'all will say. Before we get to our guests, we want to ask you to help spread the word about this community we've created in the CPG Guys. Before sharing our podcast with your friends, if you're using Apple Podcasts or Spotify as your preferred listening platform, leave us a rating as it helps find the algorithm that makes us more findable by CPG retail people like you. looking for both education and, of course, entertainment. Peter and I will tell you we are a baseball podcast that also talks about retail media, AI, and some other stuff. We're happy that the CPG Guys is part of an impressive collective of highly rated podcasts, including CPG Guys Fast Forward, hosted by Brian Gildenberg, CPG Scoop with Risa and Jennifer, and the FMCG Guys with Daniel, Efrain, and Christine. Finally, we're incredibly proud of our allyship with NextUp, whose mission is to advance the cause of women in business and to promote gender equality in the workplace. NextUp has terrific educational networking resources available to members, and I, of course, serve on the board of directors leading the development committee of NextUp. Links to our podcast, Sistercast, a landing page on NextUp, social media profiles of my daughters, Rhea and Lara, and Kavita's podcast may be found in the digital liner notes of this episode. Before we get this conversation going, let me say hello to my podcast partner here on the other side of the continent, a Dodgers fan living in the East Coast while I, a Yankees fan, live here on the West Coast. Peter, how you doing? How's the weather? What's going on? How did the Dodgers open 2024 quest for the, of course, rated to be in the World Series?
All right. So technically, the Dodgers opened up earlier in the week with two games against the Padres, which they split. But on official opening day of baseball, the powerful trio of Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman delivered a 7-1 victory. So we are over the St. Louis Cardinals, my late grandmother's favorite team. So it was a good day in baseball. Sri, my question is, like, now that, you know, Lara's going to have a podcast, Rhea's going to have a podcast, you've got one, Kavita's got one. What about your cats? Don't they need a podcast next?
Like, it's coming. They have an Instagram page, Zay. For those who don't know, they actually have followers. It's called Zane Zorazumi. We got to get more frequent with it, but they have an active Instagram page.
We're going to have to add their Instagram tag onto the digital liner notes of this podcast so they can follow your cat, Sri. But I'm doing great. Looking forward. Really excited about today's episode because we have a returning guest, and she is an OG. We're talking like very early, the year 2000. We are now celebrating our 4-year anniversary of doing this podcast. Hard to believe that, Sri. 360 episodes, million downloads. I mean, crazy, but we've got one of the originals, an old colleague of yours, good friend, and can't wait to get to our conversations. Let me pass it back to you.
Like I said, Peter, I told my younger daughter, who's now signed to Universal Music's venture here, Cat's Eye, I think I'm a celebrity too. And she said we're not, because we're not relevant on Instagram and TikTok. So I don't know how to interpret that. I told her I'll show you off at grocery shop this year because that's our Comic-Con. Let's make sure we take a bunch of pictures. But let's get going with our guests today. So we have on this episode two of America's brightest female leaders, both who I've actually had the fortune and pleasure of working with at Revlon. One, of course, as Peter mentioned, is the OG here on the CPG Guys way back from July 2020. Oshia Savur is the Chief Brand and Marketing Officer for Mesa, a Bain portfolio company, and Padma Hari is brand new in her role as Chief Digital Officer at Nestle Purina. Together, they're also co-hosts of the podcast WH-TH-Tech, or What the Tech. So where they take the buzzwords out of our industry and demystify modern tech trends and brand marketing phenomenons with erstwhile would have just been buzzwords or mystify people like us in the sales world. Sometimes I feel marketing uses those buzzwords just to spin our heads. I'm saying that in jest, of course, because Oshia is a brand marketer. Hey, Padma, Oshia, CPG Guys community welcomes you to the podcast. How are you guys doing?
Very good. Thank you so much for having us, Sri. I'm looking forward to some fun and interesting conversation.
Likewise, thank you for having me. I love the title of the OG podcast guest on this platform. Loving it.
Oshia, I don't know if you know this, but it's kind of like Saturday Night Live, where if you're on the show as a host 5 times, they would give you a velour smoking jacket. We have these lovely CPG Guys varsity jackets. So you are now 2 down, only 3 more episodes, and you get your varsity jacket.
Oh my God, you make me work hard for it. I'm up for it though.
You get fashion for this. This is good.
Of course, this is going to be fun and interesting because we've never had those moments before, especially at alma mater. And I'll never forget the day when Padma and I decided to leave to go pursue other opportunities in life. We had gone to that 150-year-old bar. We had a beer together. It was Wednesday, middle of March 2020. And Friday of that week, New York went from, there's this something coming from the Far East, which looks like a virus, to you can't leave home for the next week. And that became COVID. So that was quite an interesting time in life. So we appreciate both of you making time to speak to us about your professional experiences, thoughts on the evolution of omnichannel marketing anchored on technology, and breaking the glass ceiling as female leaders who made it up top. But before we get to our questions, why don't you both start with a high-level overview of your current professional area of focus? Maybe Osh, you can go first.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to. Let's see, where do we start? To just sort of do a whistle-top view, sort of very high level, right? Started my career, grew up in India. I'm Indian, studied there, did my MBA. My first role at Unilever, lived in many different countries with them, and then found my way to the U.S. in 2010. The love of my life, my husband now. And so at Unilever, I spent like 10 years there overall. And I say that I was born and brought up at Unilever. Everything I know, I learned from them. It's such an amazing, amazing company. And then after I'd been there many years, had been in several senior roles, I think that I had an itch. And the itch was to go and throw myself into doing something I'd never done before. And that's how I found my role in, as head of global marketing for Juicy Couture Fragrances. So coming from mass hair category, which is problem solution, low price points, $2 was a premium price point for a $1 brand. That's the world that I came from, to a completely want category. Who really needs a fragrance? It's a want category. You come to a $100 perfume and fantasy, from problem solution to the world of fantasy, right? So really moving from problem solution to desire. So really opened up different parts of my brain that I hadn't used before. And Elizabeth Arden Inc. owned the Juicy Couture brand. We got acquired by Revlon and by association. Then we all worked together at Revlon and really learned a ton from there as well. Had really amazing roles in e-com and running the whole luxury division portfolio for Revlon. Amazing, amazing stuff. Touched many different categories. And then found my way to Charlotte Tilbury Beauty, which is a prestige makeup company. Again, extremely high growth. While I was there, we drove the business almost triple digits in revenue year on year, twice in a year in a row. Really, really very exciting and exhilarating. So by now, I've been in prestige, mass, literally every single category of beauty and personal care I could imagine. And so then Mesa felt like the right next step in the career, because we play right in between mass and prestige. And right across all personal care and beauty categories, there isn't a category that we aren't brave enough to just walk into. In fact, that's our model: find the CPG giant category and let's go disrupt it. So I feel like I'm in a happy place right now at Mesa, living at the price point that's a happy place, living, doing all kinds of categories, finding ways to launch new brands, new product, and also still scaling the brands that we do have in the portfolio. So long-winded answer, but I hope that it answered the question of the pivotal moments within it.
Yeah, that was great.
Padma, off to you.
All right. I too grew up in India, started my career as a financial analyst, and I have my education, my undergrad in finance and statistics, and accidentally fell into technology. I have worked with several organizations: McDonald's, Chase, Revlon, Reckitt, Macy's, Bloomingdale's. So my entire career, as it started as a financial analyst, and I fell into data and analytics, which wasn't called analytics or something sexy back then. It was just called statistics. And we were like, you know, a bunch of statisticians who were running numbers and like, you know, figuring it out, like predicting things, right? And as my career evolved, it eventually got into a track of data analytics and transformation, because anytime companies talked about digital transformation, they talked about how do I consolidate my data. That becomes like, you know, the foundational ground. And that pretty much how my career has tracked, where I walk into companies, look at what is their digital positioning, how are they digital centric, digital first organization, and how are they utilizing their data to their advantage, or even tapping into the external data to their advantage. And that has led to me to my current role at Purina. So it has been a fun journey. We're constantly learning. As you know, technology is changing on a minute-by-minute basis. And how companies use technology to get a winning edge changes by minute. So not a dull moment. It has been fun.
Wow, that's terrific, Padma. So the two of you decided to
undertake an endeavor that Sri and I started this journey on 4 years ago. And Sri made mention of the fact that you founded a podcast called What the Tech. I love that. Always go with a name that is catchy, that people can remember. And I think you definitely did that. So we've talked about our origin story on this podcast many, many times before. I want to hear your origin story. Like, what was the inspiration for the podcast? What's it all about? And what can, because we want our listeners to listen to your podcast too. So what can they expect if they go over and click favorite on their podcast platform and add What the Tech to their rotation?
Sure. First of all, I would call out the name was coined by Osha. I'm not that creative. That is something she came up with. So all props to her. When we started the podcast, given the role I have, companies are quite intimidated when they talk about technologies. We live in a world where mid-level leaders, senior leaders, executives, they necessarily did not grow up in the world of technology like how millennials grew up, right? So it is a skill that they have learned over the course of their career. And everybody felt quite intimidated of with the use of technology and what kind of buzzwords that are floating in the market. So every time I would go present my strategy, I constantly kept seeing the executives having like, you know, this like glossy look in their eyes. And I was like, okay, this is so simple in my head. What is not connecting? And I think part of it was the intimidation. Part of it was, hey, I'm senior enough. How do I ask silly questions? And part of it was like, you know, there were so many buzzwords in past 10 years. The amount of marketing technologies has done, it is phenomenal, right? So it is very hard for them to keep up with that. So the whole idea behind this podcast was, one, normalizing ignorance. If you are, irrespective of where you are in the corporate hierarchy, it's never a shameful thing to ask a question. I don't know this. The second piece was like looking at the buzzword and demystifying these buzzwords and giving our audience a platform where they can come and collect tips and tools that they can implement into their day-to-day life and become that digital first organization that everybody is right now aspiring to become.
Yeah, no, I think, Padma, I remember the day you called me about this whole idea. And for me personally, I find it so interesting is that as a marketer, you have to just be very humble into knowing that you can't know it all. And it's just changing so fast. And really, for me personally, the podcast journey has been, quite honestly, been a learning journey, right? There's so much going on in AI and the technology space right now. What's the best way to invest in yourself is by learning. So, and I get to co-hosted with Padma because every now and then Padma and I have really good conversations where she gets to teach me a thing or two in terms of what's happening, right? So I think when you come and listen to our podcast, we keep it real. Sometimes we break into these questions where I'm like, okay, wait a second, you both are teching out right now on me. I didn't understand a word of what you just said to me right now. Can you please treat me like a two-year-old and take me from the start, right? So that is sort of the vibe of it. You know, we keep it real. We want to talk about the real stuff because we know the real stuff. It's the deep understanding of these topics is what actually helps us make the right decisions.
So can you help us normalize ignorance here? Peter and I are wondering if climate change is real.
It is real.
Oh my God, are we going to talk about this? This is like a political rabbit hole. I will not walk into that one.
Just kidding. So Osha, I know you spoke a little bit about your career, right? But take us through a little bit of how pivotal roles and the learning you had from each of those roles that served you in preparing for your current role at Mysore. But let me remind our audience first before we get there that both of Osh and Padma's links to the companies as well as their current LinkedIn profiles will be available in the digital liner notes of this podcast. So you can, while you multitask and listen to this, you can easily find them on LinkedIn as well. Go for it.
And Sri will include the link to their podcast, What the Tech. That's an important ad, right?
1,000%. So Osha, what have you learned from other career moves that you've had that's actually helping you today at Mysore?
Thank you. Thank you, first of all, for all your support. It means the world to Padma and I as we are starting off on our journey here with What the Tech. To answer your question in terms of the learnings, how I think about my career is sort of in three parts. One is development and quintessential brand marketing, right? Brand strategy, product development, pipelining of 3 years out, NPD, and where is the brand going in innovations and all of that. Second part that I look at it is analytics and portfolio management, which is a lot of what I learned at Revlon and what I get to do so much of at Mesa as well, just managing the complexity of many different brands in your portfolio, managing the P&L overview of all of it and driving growth overall for the business, because revenue is important only when there is profit coming with that revenue, right? So I think a little bit of that, and the more the marketers understand the business side of it, I think the better are the decisions that brands and companies make to drive growth. And then the third pillar, as I think of it from my career standpoint, is the activation. How do you go to market from a digital marketing standpoint, omni-channel marketing standpoint, and D2C standpoint, and what channels to play in, and so on and so forth. And that has been my Charlotte Tilbury experience. So Unilever was all product development, strategy, frameworking. Revlon was very much portfolio management and P&L and so on and so forth. And then the third piece is Charlotte Tilbury, which was a full funnel marketing in a way that is so explosive in North America. So at Mesa, why all of those three things sort of come together really nicely is that my role is brand and marketing, which that means is that I have five departments under me. It's the creative studio. It's the incubation and innovation. So all the new brands that we create, all the new products that we create are created by my team. Then it's the brand marketing aspect, which is your traditional omni-channel marketing and digital marketing and all of that good stuff. Then you have integrated marketing, which is the new world of PR, influencer, and social, not new anymore, but relatively still new in the mass CPG world. And then the fifth piece is the marketing operations of it, which is that how do you, at a company like Mesa that is so fast growing and so fast, like double, triple digit growth, right? How do you bring the company along on the back end to deliver that growth at breakneck speed, right? So the marketing operations of it and how that whole thing comes together is the fifth department. So I feel like the career that I had prior set me up so beautifully to the job that I do now at Mesa, because in a given day, I could be talking about gross margin optimization to how do we appease and get a celebrity and an influencer to talk about a brand in an earned capacity, a corporate comms piece, to then P&L management, to then brand strategy growth, right? Like in a given day, all those five things could be happening at the same time. And I feel like I'm in my happy comfort zone place. So I hope that answers your question, Sri.
So you mentioned omnichannel there a couple of times. So I'm going to jump right into that, Osha. As a modern marketer working in what I would call luxury, fragrance, beauty, that category, how do you manage this every day for the, what does that word even mean to you? And how do you manage this every day for the brands you support?
Yeah. You know, I think we were all at Shop Talk very recently, right? And the new buzzword as it started to emerge was the unified retail. And I thought it was a very interesting take on omnichannel. And I see the limitations of omnichannel as I'm now thinking about it for the last week or so. I think omnichannel sort of assumes that there is a wall between the stores and the e-commerce side of the business. And I think where we're now going is this digitally influenced sales, because there isn't a sale, or there's very few sales where we're not looking at our phone, whether we're in store, just showrooming and learning more about the brand, to before it, to learning about it on a TikTok or watching a TV ad, right? Like if it's all becoming just part of the same ecosystem. And so how I think about now the sales is that it's all one. It's not this or that. It's digitally influenced sales. So I think, and while the companies have transformed to that, and from P&L responsibility standpoint and department standpoint, it's a whole different rabbit hole, right? But I think in terms of purely from a marketing standpoint, how I think about it is you want to be present everywhere, but the choices you make are by brand in terms of what is the nation, the subculture that you're tapping into as a brand, and really honing in on that priority platform for your brand. So a good example of that would be, for instance, in our portfolio, we have a brand, Kristin Ess. And Kristin Ess is the brand that we say is a brand that's still the only female-founded hairdresser brand in mass categories, right? In prestige, there are more examples, but in mass, we're still the only ones. And when you think about the look of that brand, it's very chic, it's very minimalist, it's very it girl brand. And the founder was a celebrity hairstylist. So going back into the DNA of it, the how we're thinking about the marketing of all of that, right? We're saying we want to be in the celebrity world. We want to be on the red carpet. We want to be with the it girls, the it influencers, and so on and so forth, right? So the go-to-market is very, very focused on Instagram, plus TikTok, et cetera, and therefore how we also show up on our end caps in store and the marketing that we put out there. It's very comprehensive and telling that story. Versus on the other side, I have a brand called Heritage by Mindy McKnight, who started off as a YouTube mom and is now the number one YouTube mom, right? And so it's a very different mindset. It's American values. It's girl next door. It's very homey. It's very TikTok. It's not a brand that you'll find on a red carpet, but it's 100% a brand you want to be friends with because she's the girl next door, right? So it's very different marketing, demographics, strategies. So there we're creating a whole infrastructure on TikTok. Really, we were the first brand to go into TikTok Shop. In fact, Mindy has been out there talking about it with TikTok Shop team as well, right? And it made a lot of sense for us to be on TikTok Shop because we have a founder who knows hair, who's created those live streams on YouTube. She was the OG on YouTube, right? And now bringing that sort of knowledge and game-changing attitude towards TikTok Shop, right? So it's a very different go-to-market. But in the end, you still have to think about that in-store shopper who, by virtue of being in mass retail, tends to be on the older side. So she may or may not always be on TikTok. So you can't just do just that, you know? So that's where all the in-store ways and retail media networks and all of those become extremely critical too, because you want to be where the consumers are.
Yeah, TikTok Shops have me fascinated right now, Ocean. In fact, a lot of big scale brands are really excited about that and they want to get into it. But I know that, for instance, like the ones particularly that are selling through Amazon, Amazon is promoting the fact that you can connect your TikTok Shop to your Amazon storefront, so you don't even have to create a new ecosystem. The challenge, though, right now is that that only works for 3P sellers. 1P sellers, they can't do that. So all these scale brands want to get into it, but there are some limitations. So still some friction going on in this space. But I know it's so fascinating. I mean, just the rate of adoption and transformation that's going on. I love this. Padma, here's my question for you. What do you see as being the role of technology in modern retail, this unified commerce world that Osha so vividly described, and in modern brand equity development? And particularly when I think of the term AI, it's the buzzword we hear at all the trade shows. Demystify that, try and differentiate between like what we would think of more as machine learning and kind of the future of what we're seeing around generative AI. Would love to hear how you're looking at these technologies, particularly AI, in terms of bringing to life this vivid world of unified commerce.
Can I ask a question on Padma first?
Sure.
Is AI I?
AI I?
Is that what it means, like I?
Oh, geez, Sri.
I?
Don't listen to him, Padma. Ignore my co-host.
Ignore the question.
Ignore his question. He's here for comic relief only. Seriously.
California man, it's the showbiz.
Do you know what? You know what's great, Padma? People ask me why I stick with Sri this long. I don't know if you know this. The federal government considers time spent with Sri to be charitable, so I can actually deduct from my taxes the time that I spend with Sri. It's really good.
Y'all can do it too. Anytime you're in the entertainment biz, I think he's creating a new tax code to claim
it.
No
doubt.
2024. Early donation.
Enough of you, Sri. So back to the role of technology in modern retail and brand equity development, and particularly around AI, which is the buzzword we're all talking about right now. I'd love to hear your take on this.
Sure. I think with AI, before we even jump into machine learning and AI, when internet came along, right, it came in like we all focused on search engine. And if you remember, I am going to date myself, Yahoo used to have these groups where you can go and like, you know, with the preference of your, like you're into sports, you can join that group and you can talk to people. And then came along Facebook. What technology has done is created a connected ecosystem. It was very much on the social front, right? Now we have evolved in this space and gotten into a space where we want a connected commerce. We want connected manufacturing. We want connected supply chain. And the conversations we are having with our consumers or our customers, we want that to be connected. And us being consumers as well, we don't sit there and think, oh, when I go to a .com site, how are they speaking to me versus when I go to the store to buy a product, right? It's irrelevant for me. For how a brand treats me and how it shows up is agnostic to the channel it is talking me to me through, right? So that is one of the things like the connected world is bringing. And it has a huge importance if you really think back in the day, you had some national media running, you had some commercial TV ads running, you had these big moments in time in a given year where you can actually really build your brand and create an identity. Now this is like breathing. Every information that goes out, whether it's through social media, whether it is your content or it is a UGC, your brand is constantly being talked about. And what happens in that scenario is you are generating a monumental amount of data. And now this becomes a brand's responsibility to say, how am I going to harness that data and use it to my advantage? So if you really think like, you know, let's like jump into the ML and AI question. It's a very standard evolution. AI is not something new. It's statistics. It has been happening for a long time. Back in the day, we didn't have this much volume, the velocity and the variety of data that we have today. So now we can statistically do something really good with the variety and volume of that data, hence AI. And ML is actually, AI is part of ML, machine learning. It's a more evolved and self-learning version of machine learning. So when you look at all this data, synthesize it and try finding these signals that is going to actually benefit your brand, I would call that ML. And when you build an intelligent solution that can actually start reading these signals and start telling you how should you, or what is the action you should take as a marketer, as a supply chain, as a manufacturer, that's where AI comes into play. So as I said earlier, I give props to technology companies who have made a phenomenal marketing efforts in publicizing AI. And now it's like, you know, AI has become the buzzword, like, which is very quickly losing relevance because AI is everywhere. It is nothing new. It is nothing fancy. It's everywhere. And that's one thing that every brand needs to understand. This is a new way of life. This is not a project you are doing. This is not something, a new capability you're bringing to the company. This is here to stay. And this is the new way of life. And if you want to build your brand equity, you need to start focusing on your data and harnessing the power of that data.
Yeah, I think you made mention of generative AI and creating new from old. And that fundamentally differentiates it from machine learning, which is just being able to execute tasks that are repetitive and relieve humans from the dreary, the dull, the uninteresting. But I think, you know, what we think about all this great power, we play with DALL-E, we ask questions of ChatGPT. But like the one thing generative AI is really good at doing, really, really good at doing, is just creating more code, right? That just allow us to process data so much faster. So it's not necessarily that it creates the next Mona Lisa from all of this incredible artwork out there, or it helps me write my term paper. Sometimes it just helps me do the machine learning component of AI a lot faster and a lot better. So I'm really fascinated. That's a great assessment, Padma.
And that's an amazing point, right? I want to say 10, 15 years ago, how many of us said like, hey, you want to be super successful in your job, learn how to code.
Yeah.
And in next 5 years, I would see that is not a skill people are going to hone in on, because you will have a generative AI or an AI that will actually create the code for you. Even today, I see my teams going to ChatGPT, copying the code, running the test and going, okay, is it running fine? So the time it has taken. So look how much this evolution of technology is even having an impact, leave alone just commerce, having an impact on even the jobs that are going to come to the market in the future.
If I can add a perspective on it, actually. So we've been doing a lot of work on generative AI to create content for our fragrance brand on Finery. And it has been quite remarkable in just last 6 months, the level of innovation that has happened. So when we started the journey, we weren't sure if we could get a rotating bottle image, right? Bottles could not be done. So he was like, okay, maybe we can create some imagery, but if we wanted to create e-commerce images, for instance, we couldn't do it. But now, if I were to show you, and I can after our call, or if you just go to our social media channel right now on Instagram Finery, you will find that a lot of the videos that we are posting right now were 100% created with generative AI, and none of those images existed before. And when you look at the quality of that content that we put out there, it's as good as having done a very high-end shoot.
Awesome. Let me remind our audience that we're talking to Padma Hari and Osha Savur, co-hosts of the podcast, What the Tech. Today, we're privileged to have two female leaders join us from the CPG industry. And I'm also sensing Peter smelling a co-hosted podcast between the four of us, exclusively dedicated one episode.
Are you saying a crossover event?
AI, ML, we need to solve the mystery of IE and ML. And I'm also deeply disappointed that you and I didn't learn how to code, which means for the next 4 years until that five-year mark Padma referred to, we'll need to leverage those 401c deductions. So make sure you write them off on your tax returns. Padma, so in the spirit of exactly what I said, we're lucky and honored that we have two of America's female leaders here on the show, senior executives. You made it to the top in a large publicly traded Fortune 500 company, and it's not your first rodeo doing that. Your previous role was very much that as well. Give us the real. How does it feel to be up top? What challenges have you seen in your own career for women as you made it up to the top? And what glass ceilings did you actually have to fight and actually break to get up here?
I'll say this, for the people who are starting their careers, it's lonely up top. So I want to make sure everybody understands that it is quite lonely. And it takes a lot of rigor for you to pull partnerships, right? So being that word partnership, create an ecosystem early on in your career that you have people who can give you candid advice, who can tell you what to do, what not to do. And as far as being a female professional or leader goes, one of the few things in the world we live in, our biological clock and our career clock never match up, right? And it is always in contrast to each other. And there are some sacrifices you have to make if you want to have a family. And for those women, those leaders who say, oh, you can have it all, props to them, you cannot. You always have this that you didn't spend enough time in your kids' track meet or their swim meet, or you were not there. So with that being said, it is not a super fun sailing thing, but at the same time, it is so rewarding that nobody can actually verbalize how rewarding having a good career looks like. I do think organizations now are making huge strides on their DEI initiatives, understanding the fact that the biological clock and the career clock are in competition with each other. And how do they bring this brain power to front and center? One more thing I would say, try early on in your career, try to find as many mentors in your career and try to find a sponsor. A sponsor who doesn't speak your language. One thing that I personally feel I benefited a lot, coming from a technology background, I had so many of my leaders slap my wrist of saying, you are speaking technology. I don't understand. So you need to sit on the other side of the aisle so you can tell me, how will this technology change my world? How will I sell better? How will I manufacture better? How will my supply chain be super with no issues, right? And that actually forced me to start thinking like an entrepreneur and going like, you know, how am I going to use technology to not only efficiently run my current ecosystem, but also find new business avenues. And I couldn't have done that in any way possible by myself if I didn't have those mentors and those sponsors. But I think, like, you know, when I started career, the world was a different place 20 years ago. And now the world is a different place. And I'm props to companies like mine and others who are making huge strides in bringing that equality.
See, Peter, I wasn't kidding. You know, when they refer to this word normalize ignorance right up front, right? I think it's a genuine issue, Padma, for senior leadership when it comes to technology. E-commerce was such a scary word over the last 5 years in our industry. I think I'm happy to state now, though, that 5 years later now, digital omnichannel is no longer kind of that blissful how to normalize ignorance. It has been normalized. People can speak it. Technology, I think, is a much bigger one. You know, while I refer to it in jest as IE, I think the more technology providers can decompose what it means from a business context and everyday usage, it'll actually just become a capability that's leveraged in our everyday lives.
I think that the evidence of that, Sri, is you and I talk to a lot of professionals in this space at Shop Talk, particularly I talk to quite a number of people. I see a lot of these big scaled companies starting to take those centers of excellence around e-commerce, and they're putting them back into the traditional brand organization, saying, no, this is a skill set of a brand marketer. It is not a separate discipline. It is part of what you have to do. You've had the opportunity to master it. We've trained the people. We've got them ready. Yeah, we're going to have somebody who goes out and finds new tools and capabilities, but the actual activation has to be done by the rank and file brand people who are making decisions across all the different marketing levers, right? So, Osha, this is going to go to you because this is something I've asked other people in the past, and I'd really like your take on it. For a long time, there was a fascination, particularly during the pandemic, on brands building direct-to-consumer businesses. I've got to get in this game. I have to have a brand website. I have to sell my products directly to consumers. My question to you is this: is D2C the right model for all brands? And what should kind of drive a brand's consideration as to whether they should be all in on D2C? Maybe they're just dabbling in it for one or two other reasons, or, you know, that's not the right thing for you. Like, what are the considerations that go through your head as you think across the portfolio of Mesa brands that this one is right for D2C versus, you know, it's probably less important for this one?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. Quite honestly, my point of view has not changed on D2C at all in the last many years. There was an obsession with D2C. We've all lived through it. Where generative AI is going through right now, there's a hype cycle that we were living through, right? And even then, intuitively, it just never made sense. If it's not profitable, if there is no way to scale it, right? Like, it doesn't make sense. And it's not for every price point. It's not for every brand. And my point of view hasn't changed. In fact, when D2C was all the rage, I was in mass categories and oftentimes selling really heavy products. And the fulfillment of those products just never made sense, which is part of the reason why e-commerce in general was a very challenged business model as well, because everything we did on the e-com side absolutely pulled your margin down, right? And that, so Sri, you're nodding. People can't see it, but you're nodding because you and I had many conversations around that. D2C was even worse. In like, you don't have any traffic. You have to drive all your traffic, right?
And there's a lot of customer acquisition costs to drive traffic.
A lot of, because my job in a retailer environment is to gain share, but the job of a D2C is that you have no traffic. You have to get everybody who comes to your site. You kind of have to get them there, right? So cost of acquisition made sense back then, but then all the big guys jumped in. They drove up the CPCs, and now just suddenly the cost of acquisition has gone through the roof. So the number of orders you need to finally turn profit on a consumer is probably no longer than three orders. It used to be back then. The science was three orders, which is why subscription was such a critical part of D2C, right? Three orders and you would maybe break even on your profit. And so if your cost of acquisition has gone up, I would imagine that you now need even more orders per person to break even. And subscriptions are not the fanciest thing to drive that anymore. So there's just a lot of complexities that have come through. Having said that, I've been at Charlotte Tilbury and I've been in prestige companies and brands. The model's very beautiful at that price point. With that productivity and you're doing all that media, you're driving all that PR, you're driving all that influencer, it makes a ton of sense to do it. So at Charlotte, we had a really, really strong, very strong direct-to-consumer channel, and it was our highest profitable channel too, right? So it made a ton of sense for us to push it, and we did. It was prioritized for everything, for exclusives, for leads. And even right now, you watch them, there's so many things they do just for their D2C channel, right? So you answer your question, it's not for everybody, but if there's the right profit structure for it, it could be the right thing for you. One model that I've been very seduced by, and I have not been able to pull it off anywhere, and I hope that I can somehow get that to work at Mesa, it's still work in progress, is to see if there's only a drop ship limited edition model that could work. And the goal of that is purely PR, purely influencer, purely first party data. So I create a community of consumers who become sort of like loyalists, and that then becomes my data that I then mine for better, stronger media targeting, right? So then the role of the D2C is no longer about how big can it be and how profitable can it be. It's a marketing channel to drive more consumer insights, more buzz, more desirability for your brand and excitement, and sort of almost a way to test out things before you go big with the retailer and buying all that inventory, right? So I think There is something there. I'm very seduced by that model. I haven't seen anybody do that at scale and do it well. I think TikTok Shop could be.
I think there's some shoe companies that are trying this out that have created that.
Probably not like in personal care CPG world, right? And I would say that TikTok Shop could become that, right?
Yeah, it could easily become that because they're following you and you come out with an LTO. It's a quick little hit. I think that's a really interesting. You know what's other? The thing that interests me about the D2C model is I learned this just going to the Amazon Accelerate conference last year, the sellers, right? I found there were a lot of people there that they're selling 3P, but they're using Amazon advertising to drive customer acquisition actually through Amazon storefront rather than their D2C, because there's a lot less friction when you sell through a marketplace where the consumer already has a registered ID. They don't have to enter in their credit card number again. And their attitude is, I'll just pick them up as a customer acquisition D2C because I'm getting their name and address because I'm doing the fulfillment myself. In the end, I'm giving up margin on the first transaction, but I'm going to make up margin once I bring them over to my D2C. After they've tried my product, they like it. Now they trust me. Now I can sell them D2C. Really interesting.
Yeah, no, very interesting. And I've tried some of those strategies in my prestige life. I think the challenge that we often got into there. So by the way, kudos to whoever's doing it, because I think it's a very smart way, because Amazon's an extremely smart media channel, media ecosystem. So to think of it not as a retailer, but as a media channel does make a ton of sense. Having said that, for us in my past lives, there was a lot of counterfeit product that was also there. So the risk always was that if you're going to advertise on that platform and that the consumer may not know that you're not actually listed officially on that platform. So could there be counterfeit product that then gets that volume?
You have to play a lot of whack-a-mole to third-party sellers that are selling counterfeit products that they have a bad experience. You still get blamed for that. That's the downside of it. Sure.
Correct. Exactly. So there are risks in that space. But then I think when done right and smartly and you're watching it and you've got some really strong AI tools to predict and take the 3Ps out, et cetera, there are ways to do it, but it's an interesting model for sure.
Kind of always said, Peter, that I call D2C the kryptonite of large brands. OSHA kind of the Achilles heel, but OSHA kind of decomposed the why. It really sits in that P&L, right? It just doesn't make sense when you have 25,000 store distribution.
That's it.
But your idea of limited edition is actually fantastic. Drop. And more important than just declaring that was the how. And I think stuff like TikTok Shop is definitely the way to go. Ocean Padma, so we briefly mentioned mentors. So I'd love to hear from both of you on this one. How have mentors contributed to your career advancement? How have you gone about building these relationships? How do you seek to mentor professionals earlier in their professional journey? Like, how did you guys get mentors yourself? Did you find them? They find you? And then I'm going to reverse the question back to y'all in a 180 and say, how are y'all being mentors and taking other women up the career ladder with you?
I think for me, mentors have been an extremely important part of my journey. Oftentimes, I've had to ask people for it. I don't think the mentors go around looking and saying, oh my God, you're so amazing. I want to mentor you. At least that hasn't happened to me. I'm sure there's a lot of people for whom it has happened. But I also find that when you do ask somebody to mentor you, more often than not, it's actually an honor for them as well. And it's been actually very surprising to me when that happens, because actually they find that they learn from you and that it's an honor that they get to mentor somebody. I had never thought of that, because it feels like you're asking somebody for a huge favor, for time is money. But I've been very lucky to have a few mentors who are my board of advisors, if you will. They each have a different role in my life. So they are people who I would call when I need a certain type of advice, you know, my CPG world ones, my prestige ones, my D2C ones, my technology ones, right? Like, there is the one for everybody. And quite often you call them and you can't make a decision, or you need somebody to challenge you. And to what Padma said earlier, somebody sometimes to just give you really constructive advice and tell you where your weaknesses are, where you have your blind spots. And I've been lucky enough to have mentors who keep it rather real. Sometimes too much reality comes through too. And it's painful, but it's in the end very rewarding. So I have to say I'm very lucky and fortunate to have one. And to pay it forward, I also very happily give away time. So if anybody asks me to spend time with them, and I do. So yeah, that's my story. Padma, would love to hear from you.
I would echo very similar sentiments to what Osh said. One of the things I felt I was extremely fortunate, I had leaders in my organization that were actually not technology people. They were either leading sales or they were leading supply chain. And they chose to offer me, as I was asking questions, they chose to offer their time in, which didn't seem like mentoring at that time. I didn't understand the concept of quite well mentoring at that point. And they coached me through, like, you know, how should I think differently? And I am extremely grateful for those who are hearing this podcast. They know who they are, so I'm not going to embarrass anybody by naming names. But they have gone out of their way to tell me how should I think differently out of technology. And transformation is not technology centric. And the concept of, you hear all the time, oh, we are digitally transforming. And it's a combination of people, process, and technology. And usually people, because technology can sometimes feel a little bit daunting, people go, it becomes technology centric. But usually technology is the easiest part that you're doing in the transformation journey. It is that change management. It is how do you bring people along? So one of the things that I have learned from my mentors heavily is, how do you simplify somebody's life without them knowing that you're trying to simplify their life? And that's, like, you know, as you can hear, our podcast has the same sentiment. The idea is not to, like, give you a dictionary meaning. You can go to an Urban Dictionary and figure out what the buzzwords are. You don't need us. It's that ease of conversation and that simplicity of saying, this is how life is simple. Do not try to complicate it yourself. And technology is not that complicated as tech companies have made it to be. So I would say, like, you know, I have seeked people out to mentor me, and I've been very extremely fortunate that people have blessed me with their time to mentor me. And as far as giving back to the community, I am big on women leadership. Being a woman myself, an immigrant myself, with having no family here and no support system, raising two kids, I know how hard it is. And I am very open to women who have, especially not having a strong family support system, and they are trying to juggle everything. I love helping them out and at least saying, look, it's not that complex. Don't try to boil the ocean. There is no perfection involved. There is nothing called perfect life. Don't chase it. And focus on four things you want and just go after it. If your house is dirty, don't worry about it. As long as you did a phenomenal job, you had dinner with your kids and you did a great job at work, those were your two priorities. You took care of it. Your house is dirty. Who cares? Stop trying to be a Wonder Woman. And I think that's one of the things that we need to teach all our women and our girls, that you don't have to be a Wonder Woman. You can just be you and be wildly successful.
Although a clean house is nice.
You get a mate for that.
That's why I have spouses like Shree and me. We do that work.
Hey, I got to clean drains tomorrow morning. 11 of them. Outside, front of the house, back of the house.
The minute you see those clouds coming over Los Angeles, you can bet your bottom dollar Shree's outside cleaning out the storm drains, because the house has been flooded way too many times.
Oh, really?
To our liking. Oh, my God. There's a reason why on our podcast, like, I keep suggesting to Shree that he build an ark out back of his house for the next flood that comes on, because LA is basically just like, dude, put the cats on, get the kids on, and float away, because it's a crazy.
It's not Noah's ark, it's Shree's ark.
It's exactly it.
We've kind of wondered, in California, there's a popular rhetoric that's spread by the media that this is a drought condition, fire induced space. We've had more rain here in the last 24 months than maybe all of the Pacific Ocean.
Not even close. It's
okay, I exaggerate. It may not be all of the Pacific Ocean, but definitely a lake.
Wow.
Osh, I don't think, did you feel like you answered that question well? Mentors?
Yeah, I did. I was just adding a perspective. I was just joking with Padma's conclusion. I was saying it should be about prioritization and then delegation too, because if you're not going to clean yourself, just delegate it to someone else. I.e., in your case, clearly your wives have gotten the message and have proudly delegated to the two of you, which is great.
My Indian wife outsources to her Canadian husband, as it should be.
I need to take a lesson from them, because I have not been able to do that internally in my household.
Although I'm going to comment back on what Padma said right up front, as an immigrant woman coming from another country, I'll agree with you. Like, I was an immigrant man coming, so I had to learn how to wash my dishes, how to cook by myself, how to clean my own home. So it's just innate in my DNA. At the time I decided that I am going to go get married, I was already doing those things. So they weren't foreign territory for me. So it's just naturally I've done them over time. Like, I didn't need coaching, no delegation required, etc. But I know exactly where you're going with that. It's important. People should hear. Listen, everybody. Peter, last one over to you.
Yeah. So Padma and Osha, I'll start with Padma and then Osha, you can jump in. What are some of the real, you know, other than the buzzword we mentioned, AI, what are some of the other industry trends you're watching in terms of how unified commerce and consumer engagement will impact the business? Love to hear what's on the top of your minds right now in this space that we'll probably hear more about in What the Tech.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, automation, it is used very loosely right now with generative AI and AI, like, you know, growing a new leaf right now with how much it's being popularized in the market and how democratized AI has become now than it was before. I think automation is going to be the key. Companies are going to jump into the bandwagon of looking at using this AI capability for content. Osh mentioned this, for content creation, for idea generation, and for looking at, like, you know, your leaks in your supply chain, looking at your leaks in your inefficiencies in your manufacturing. So even though people say that I am actually implementing generative AI or some kind of form of AI, what you are trying to do is automating your ecosystem. That you have a bot that is doing the thinking and the decision suggestions to you on how you should operate your ecosystem. So I think, like, you know, all companies are going to jump on this bandwagon heavily. And this is going to be a new normal, that how ERP became a new normal. This is going to become a new normal pretty soon.
What is ERP? Is it ERP?
Employee Resource Group.
Where'd you get group from, Peter?
Enterprise resource planning.
Oh, I thought it was ERP, enterprise resource. Oh, it's ERP, not ERG. Never mind. Disregard me.
Listen, we got to help people out, you know.
I know. Osha, over to you. What's top of mind for you in terms of trends that you're really following?
Yeah, no, apart from, you know, what Padma just mentioned, because we've been talking a lot about that on our podcast, almost with everybody, whoever will speak to us about it. Personally, just blending my brand marketer hat with the technology hat, with the activation and P&L hat, I do think that Gen Alpha is going to come into the purchase cycle way sooner than we were all anticipating. I feel like we were just talking about millennials. Gen Z were here a hot second, and then Gen Alpha is right behind them just coming in. Just to think about, this is truly, even more than Gen Z, the most digitally native generation that's coming in. They're far more evolved, cultured. They've traveled everywhere. They've been brought up by the millennials who broke the code on a lot of these things. So I think for me, what I'm just trying to think about is, where is this whole social landscape going to go, right? Like with TikTok, I've been very bullish on TikTok, just with the legal environment on TikTok, what's going to happen there. If TikTok, whatever happens there, right? What's the social platform that will replace it? What will be there for our media plans, our channels, our strategies? Like, all of the marketing was just like, suddenly we'll just have to pivot in 10 seconds, right? And we also all know, we've lived here long enough to know that everything that goes up at some point in time plateaus out. And therefore, then there is the disruption. For me, social media at this point in time is as big as it can be. I don't think people can spend any more time on it than they already are. But the question is,
surprise.
But the question is, what next, right? Like, social media disrupted the offline media channel. I feel like social media is coming to a point where it is becoming quite huge, and I give it 5 more years, right? But then after that, as Gen Alpha officially comes into the purchase cycle, what's going to happen? And I think as a marketer, that's just what's going on in my mind. It's like, what's next? This doesn't seem like we're done yet. What's next? And I don't know if I have a solution, but that's what's keeping me up at night sometimes.
Maybe our co-host of podcast will get the name What the Next.
What the Next? There you go.
I like that.
But let me remind our audience, you can find all of our content at cpgguys.com on our website. And if you think your company has some thought leadership to contribute to our community discussion, drop us a line at contact@cpgguys.com. Again, that email address is contact@cpgguys.com. Maybe you can join us on the podcast. Don't forget to drop us a rating at cpgguys.com on the top navigation bar up top, or on the Apple Podcast platform directly. Why this is important? because it tells us how we're doing. Are we delivering for you? Are we having the right conversations? And are we talking about the right topics such as artificial intelligence, machine learning, or even ERP today, or turning over a new leaf? Thank you to the 30,000 plus followers we have on LinkedIn. We know that's a very large number for the platform. Without you, we are nobody. Thank you for the clicks, likes, followership, DMs, and everything else you contribute, especially as we come out to trade shows. Padma and Osh, I knew this would be a fun podcast. You declared it up top. Padma, I hope you all had as much fun speaking to us as we did with you and provided a learning atmosphere for our audience as well.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us. This definitely was fun.
Exactly. Thank you for having us. Such a pleasure.
Mr. Bond, it's that time. It's the time for you to give us the takeaways.
Yeah, first and foremost, I'd say to our audience, go to the digital liner notes of this episode, click on the link to What the Tech. We'll have it there for Apple and Spotify, whichever. Those are probably the two most preferred platforms. But give them a listen. Check out the podcast. It's another take, and they demonstrated today they have some real subject matter expertise in this space. It was really nice listening to Osh's background, working at some big scale brands in both the need and the want area of consumer goods. And the fact that she's now in a position at Mesa where she is so thoroughly enjoying finding sleepy categories and discovering ways to disrupt them. And of course, for Padma, who started in finance and kind of fell into technology, and fortunately, through her career, found some leaders who were willing to coach her in a language that outside of finance and technology that was not her expertise, to make her more well-rounded and position her to be elevated in the organization. What I loved, Osha, talking about omnichannel transitioning into unified commerce. I think that's a really important thing for our audience to hear about it. Like these walls that we've created between buying online and doing things offline is very important to understand that those lines are blurred, and it's really about the digital journey, and you have to go to consumers wherever they are in that journey and reach them and connect with them and ultimately help them find how your brands can be a part of their lives. I loved Padma talking about, listen, it's pretty lonely when you get to the top, and it takes a lot of rigor to form partnerships. So being able to identify people, and you have to ask people to be your mentors. They're not lined up outside the office. Like, grab yourself a mentor as you're heading home. You've got to find people that you respect. You've got to actually ask them to be your mentors. But to the point that was made, when people ask me to be their mentor, I'm honored by that. And that just makes me want to redouble my efforts to see their success. And paying it forward is an important part for leaders across our industry. We have to take and invest in the next generation because they're going to climb higher than we are by us helping them up and then us putting them on their shoulders and watching them break those ceilings. I really liked, and I thought Osha's comments on direct-to-consumer is, the end of the day, don't do it if it can't be profitable. There are certain categories it does work in. There's certain, but if you're doing it for vanity's sake and you're losing money, you're not really serving your brand or your owners very well. And from the standpoint of looking towards future technologies, I thought Padma hit it right on the money. Automation is very important within AI. AI is being democratized, and the companies that are going to succeed are the ones who use it and apply it to automating as much of the unified commerce ecosystem as they possibly can. While Osha really honed in on the fact that the social media landscape is where we have to pay attention. A lot of commerce is being done on social, not necessarily on retail going forward. And retail ecosystems and marketplaces need to learn how to plug into the social networks in order to accelerate their ability to sell directly to consumers, because that's where the next generation in particular is spending most of their time. Those are my thoughts, Sri.
Peter, thank you so much. Padma, Osh, what a pleasure hosting two of our senior female leaders in the CPG industry. As predicted, conversation was a lot of fun, a lot of learning, a lot of education. For our audience, you will also find this airing later on an episode of What the Tech, not just the CPG guys. So do check out What the Tech, that podcast. Do follow them as you do follow us. Much more to come, maybe more collaborations with What the Tech. Time will tell. But thank you for listening to the CPG guys. See you soon, folks, on another episode of the CPG guys.
content in this podcast episode is provided for general informational purposes only. By listening to our episode, you understand that no information contained in this episode should be construed as advice from CPG Guys LLC or the individual author, hosts, or guests, nor is it intended to be a substitute for research on any subject matter. Reference to any specific product or entity does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by CPG Guys LLC. The views expressed by guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. The views expressed by CPG Guys LLC do not represent the views of their employers or the entity they represent. CPG Guys LLC expressly disclaims any and all liability or responsibility for any direct, indirect, incidental, special, consequential, or other damages arising out of any individual's use of, reference to, or inability to use this podcast or the information we present in this podcast.